Boy Ty right now at the Rocket Mortgage Classic up in Detroit. If you haven't been catching any PGA Tour golf and you have the day off today, flip it on over to NBC. They've got live golf on right now. Seamus Power, Matthew Wolf, Bryson DeChambeau, and Mark Hubbard. They are all tied at 11 under. All are finished for the day. So our Knoxville's own Scott Stallings is on the course. He is getting ready to tee off in about 5 minutes, so we'll keep you updated on his round. He is 7 under for the tournament, shooting a 65 yesterday, so look for him to put in some work today. Very excited for Scott Stallings, coming off a great week last week and back putting up a big number yesterday to definitely be proud of. So we'll see what round number two looks like for him. I also just saw scrolling Twitter, Kansas, Vince Ferrara becomes the latest school to push the absolute stop button. I mean, it's really not even pause when you consider they are done with voluntary workouts right now for the next 14 days. They're going to go through a 14-day quarantine period for all of the student athletes and the staff, and then they will be retested for the virus prior to participating in any more football activities. So Kansas, the last team or latest team to shut down for their workouts.
Yeah, so that's off schedule from what the plan is. Is that right? From what the original 6-week ramp up was, Kansas is stopping this separate from their planned return time. Is that right?
Say again now.
No, I'm saying this was unexpected. This was
They were doing the voluntary workouts and they had to stop. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because of COVID. So, yeah. I mean, if you're going to get it right, you need to figure stuff out now. I don't know how they did their testing or what their numbers were prior to and how much of this being preventative was, or if there were just too many of those positive tests.
They had too many positive tests, yes, according to Chris Vanini from The Athletic.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it's something else to keep an eye on, and you hope it doesn't impact their preparation for the season and doesn't – if we see more and more of these is when you're going to start to see it impact – more of the season, but for right now, it just lessens their preparation, I guess.
So Kansas is not able to continue on with voluntary workouts because of COVID-19 positive test spikes. You'll remember Jeremy Pruitt was on the Dan Patrick Show earlier this week talking about Tennessee not having any players to this point test positive for COVID-19. Also went on to say that they will be retested when they get back from the holiday weekend. So this is definitely something to put on your radar and be very aware of in regards to the University of Tennessee. I mean, at this point in time, anybody around the country could be making this announcement. I mean, it really is non-discriminatory, and you hope that everybody is very responsible over the weekend and staying safe, washing their hands, doing what they need to do to stay healthy. But hopefully we're not talking about Tennessee pushing the pause button next week.
Yep, you're right about that. Because let's be honest, even if you think you're taking the precautions, there's no guarantee of it. If you think everyone in your bubble is safe, that doesn't mean then when you get together that you won't still test positive and pass it along. Now, there was one of those schools where they had an outbreak because there was players on a lake that got together at somebody's lake house, and they were able to trace it back to that big get-together.
Yep.
There's a good chance that something like that is going to happen over this holiday weekend, even if they think that they're being safe with precautions. You're not going to be perfect oftentimes. So there's a fair chance that we're going to see some more positive tests on the backside.
Paul Feinbaum was on Get Up on ESPN this morning, and he said in his estimation, it's below 50% right now on whether a college football season will be played. College football is in peril right now, according to Paul Feinbaum. So there's a long way to go. We'll see what happens. Honestly, it's just, I guess, the the topic of the everybody's going to be talking about it every single day until the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm willing to go to those percentages yet, Heather. We still have time. They're going to have to figure it out in the not too distant future, and it's going to have to improve in a lot of areas. And maybe it's just he's projecting that people's their behavior and their isn't going to change, and so this is going to continue to grow and get worse. We'll see if there is a turnaround on it, but less than 50%, that's harsh. Maybe I'm just being overly optimistic that they can find a way, but maybe the fans' involvement with more and more people being adamant about doing their own thing and not wanting to wear a mask and feel so restricted, they want to live their life. Well, I think all that, the main thing that does is not necessarily remove college football, but it removes the chance for fans to be as much of a part of it as they'd like to be.
656-9900, *990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. Earlier this week, Vince, you were filling in for Jimmy Himes on Sports Talk, and you guys talked to one of the head coaches, Will Healy, that's on the upcoming schedule for Tennessee. We'll bring you some of Will Healy's Charlotte coaches' comments in regards to Jeremy Pruitt. That's coming up next. Stay tuned for that. We also have Will Shelton game day on Rocky Top coming up at 1:30. This is Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.
Covering Tennessee, the SEC, and everything else in between, it's Sports 180 with Josh and Heather.
Traveling far, without a home, not without a star.
Free. Earlier this week, Vince Ferrara, you guys talked to head coach of Charlotte, Will Healy, as Charlotte is the opening opponent for the Vols, or at least that's on the schedule. Knock on wood, and fingers crossed that that game will be played. But he specifically was talking about Jeremy Pruitt earlier this week. And before we play the clip, what were your sort of thoughts on Will Healy's comments?
Well, he was fantastic, very entertaining, sort of poking fun at himself. And I asked him what the Austin Peay experience as a head coach and being an Eddie Robinson coach of the year on the FCS level. I mean, he had great success there. It's such a young coach. I asked him what that experience meant for him, and he said that I knew absolutely nothing, because Charlotte was definitely a whole new type of setup and experience. And he came across great, and one that you could see why he was able to have that early impact. First year as head coach got him to a bowl game, and he said, clearly I knew nothing about preparing my team for a bowl game because they lost to Buffalo in the Bahamas Bowl in his first year. Just really personable and energetic. And I thought it really outlined his experience as a Tennessee fan growing up and spending time at Chattanooga as well, and how much he really respected the Tennessee program. So I thought a lot of the conversation was on along those lines.
So here is head coach of Charlotte, Will Healy, talking about Jeremy Pruitt.
I think Coach Pruitt has done a tremendous job. And I think obviously what they're doing in recruiting right now is insane. I think that the progress they made, especially the second half of the season last year, is really impressive, and I've always known he was a great football coach. I used to recruit his dad's high school, and so I knew about him, but I didn't really know him. And he may not know who the heck I am, but I look forward to getting a chance to meet him and be around him. And I know he's exceptional at what he does. Obviously, one of the best defensive minds in the game, and I really do know coach speak. You know, just being a Tennessee guy, I'm impressed with what he's done to bring some life back into Tennessee football. And so, you know, a really cool experience for me. I mean, I was an assistant at Chattanooga. My wife's actually taken a picture of me standing on the sidelines because I was like, you know, I don't care what the pregame talk is. I'm going to go watch this T thing expand, and I'm going to be on the field when this team runs out to run through the T, because I've been in the stands so many times as a youngster watching it that it was almost like me being, you know, a Tennessee fan my whole life and watching the team run out through the T and then be like, oh, my goodness, we got to play these dudes here in just about 10 minutes. So it'll be surreal. I think that it's the mecca of college football. I think that, you know, I grew up, my dad, uncle, and granddad all played at Georgia Tech, so I grew up a big Georgia Tech fan, but my best friend was a big Tennessee fan, and I'd go to games, and I'd be the first one leaning over the edge asking for T. Martin's wristband and, you know, Peerless Price and Cedric Wilson, and, I mean, I know the history of Tennessee football. Obviously, went to camp as a youngster, you know, 5'9", 149-pound high school quarterback, wondering why the heck Randy Sanders and Phillip Fulmer weren't recruiting me. And, you know, then getting in the college game, you're like, you know, I mean, you probably weren't good enough, big fella. So surreal moment for me, and a tremendous program, huge test for our program, but, you know, if we got any guys that want to play in the National Football League, or if you want to put your brand on the national stage, going to Neyland Stadium is a pretty good start.
Comments from Charlotte head coach Will Healy. A lot of personality packed into there. Rattled off some really good names in Tennessee history with Cedric Wilson, T. Martin, and Peerless Price. And I liked his candor that he talked about the Vols and being on the sideline in Neyland Stadium for the first time, like what that felt like. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and wanting to be there for the opening up of the tee and the players running through the tee as well, and then realizing, oh, man, I got caught up in this. Now we got to play them in 10 minutes when he was with Chattanooga. Just really cool. And, hey, maybe he can ask T. Martin for his wristband maybe after the game, perhaps, because T. Will be there also. Yeah, just great personality, and I thought did a great job in reflecting his personality, his background with UT, but then a great representative for Charlotte as well. And it's a tough opponent. They also play, and I brought this up to him, so he has a history with Tennessee, Heather, but Charlotte also plays in non-conference Duke, led by David Cutcliffe,
yeah,
who was there during those years as well. So that Tennessee history will carry on to a second non-conference game for him as well, and bring him back a few of those memories.
Something we talked about yesterday is the likelihood of just going to a conference schedule, if that is an idea that's really being kicked around behind closed doors. As everybody's, like you heard earlier this week, the TSSAA has now proposed four different plans for the Board of Controllers to sort of look at and figure out, okay, this is the plan we want to go with. You know, this will be A and this will be B if we can't execute A. But when you look at some alternative plans that are probably being made on the college level, you would imagine at some point in time in their back pocket, they do have a plan to go conference games only.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we, at first, when all scenarios were being discussed, when the pandemic we first got rolling into it, one of the things that was talked about is that possibility of conference only. And then as things started to improve a little bit, you went away from it. You thought we're going to be able to get most of the season in, and now we're coming back to it. And one of those options that the league has admitted that they had discussed in conference only was having a ninth conference game by playing the 2021 cross division rival opponent on the schedule. So that crossover matchup added to this year, and for Tennessee, that would be
Ole Miss,
a home game against Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And obviously it's going to vary. Some teams that already have a tough schedule would have a tough new opponent on top of that, and then others that have it easy, some would have it easy again. But, you know, that's something to kind of look after, is if they do conference only, will they keep it at 8? Will they move it to 9? Certainly we all hope it doesn't get to something like that. But you have to look at all those scenarios with things going in the wrong direction, including states like Florida, and Texas and California.
Yeah,
more of those things being up in the air.
When USC announced that it was going to online classes only, what were your initial thoughts? Were you just like, oh, crap, that was not the news we needed to read? Or, I mean, every area is different. That's the crazy thing is every single area, even though, you know, numbers have gone up still in the East Tennessee area, you still feel pretty confident about the overall situation in the area that we live in.
Right. I'll tell you what. Had that been a story maybe while we were at our peak initially a month and a half ago, I would say, well, that's going to rule out USC. There's no way they're playing football if there's not students on campus. I think, though, and Bear brought up good points, I do think that they can still make that happen. It just makes it look like and highlights the fact that this is about money. And so there could be a long-term payment for schools on the back end by having that perception, which is, of course, the reality also. But I think it's more doable, especially because some schools are doing more hybrids. Even on the high school level, Heather, here, what they're doing in the Tampa Bay area is they are sending parents surveys with three options on how they want their kids to take in school this year. Is it all in class? Is it a hybrid of some in class and some online? Or is it all online? And whatever you choose for your kid is what you have through Christmas. So they're in the high school level that they could very well still play high school football while not having all the students in their schools. And I think there's that possibility in college campuses also. And Bear brought up another great point is that, look, those college students that are getting tested for COVID now that will later walk around their campus, we wouldn't find out that they were potentially asymptomatic carriers. The fact that they're going through all the athletic safety and health measures maybe takes some of the risk off of the campus for those that are on it. So there's certainly things in to benefit having sports still happen even if all your students aren't on campus. So it didn't have the reaction that it would have prior to the way things have played out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if the announcement would have been made like at the beginning of May, a lot of people would have said, I mean, even Bob Bowlesby, commissioner of the Big 12, he was like, man, if students aren't on campus, there's no way our football players will be. And he quickly backed up those comments like 3 weeks later. He's like, well, maybe I spoke too soon. And, again, making these big sweeping judgments and sweeping statements, I think is just irresponsible at this point in time because this is like day by day. I mean, look at what happened to Kansas. Everything's rocking and rolling, going on great with the voluntary workouts, and then boom, have to hit the stop button today and stop all voluntary workouts for the next 14 days. So it's a fluid situation, and the more information, which coincides unfortunately with time, because research takes time, but the more information we gather about what we're actually dealing with here, the better equipped we are to figure out a plan to move forward to return to some normalcy.
That's exactly right. I think it is so easy to take a couple of incidents and run with it and make a grand declaration, a sweeping judgment of what's going to happen for the future. I don't know. Maybe people want to be the ones to say, I told you so. I don't care about that. I want sports to happen. I'm not worried about being the one to say, I told you so. I just think that there are so many other factors that people think they know and they don't know that maybe should hold back until we find out more information. And because things are changing daily, maybe there are scenarios to where you can make things happen and adjust to it, because a lot of this is going to be the reaction. How do the schools react? How do the players change their behavior? A lot of unknowns along the way, because we've had the curves and all kinds of unexpected hurdles along the way. We're going to continue to have that, and maybe you figure it out along the way. We'll see. Maybe that's overly optimistic. I'm not making an absolute that we're going to have it or not, but I think there's still, we have to play this out.
There's still time
before you make those big decisions.
We'll talk to Will Shelton from Game Day on Rocky Top coming up next, get his thoughts on Caden Salter and the Elite 11 and if college football is going to happen this upcoming season. So we'll talk to Will Shelton coming up next on Sports 180.
Hey, I'm Ball for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just
64 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Back to the Stanley Fences and Gates hotline right now. Will Shelton from Game Day on Rocky Top is joining us. Will, I saw on y'all's Twitter account you were going to be tuned in to the Dan Patrick Show when Jeremy Pruitt made his appearance earlier this week. I think it was on Wednesday. What did you think of the interview with Coach Pruitt? And should Coach Pruitt, according to Dan Patrick, always wear orange when doing those national TV interviews?
Yeah, you know, there's always a certain percentage of the fan base that, I, no matter who the coach is, that always looks at that first of why didn't he have some orange on, why didn't they, you know, a lapel pin or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, there's always going to be a group you're never going to please them unless you're wearing orange every day. But it's like part of me, you really want to applaud Tennessee for, hey, no positive tests in the football program and when other programs are, you know, seeing a lot worse numbers. But I think some of that stuff is still just kind of so random and so dependent on individuals. I don't know that it's overly fair to say, oh, what a great job Tennessee is doing in particular with that. I think they're, like anybody, they're doing the best they can. So it's I think, noteworthy to hear Pruitt or just anybody related to Tennessee talk about something that's not recruiting. That's been the mindset here for the last 3-4 months of this. And so I think it's encouraging for fans anytime you're hearing anyone talk about just the potential for football, even though now you just heard on your countdown, we're whatever, 64 days away here. So you would love to hear anything concrete from Pruitt or Fulmer or any of these guys. It's just still, there's so little of substance, so little of concrete that they can actually put out there. So I think Pruitt, you know, overall as an interview, and in this case, he's not going to be the most exciting guy in the world. But when you're recruiting as well as he is, he doesn't have to be. And if Tennessee, if we do play football and Tennessee gets it going in the right direction, I think all that stuff will come along. So, yeah, it's never going to hurt him to put some orange on, to be sure. But, I think just kind of the straight and narrow, if you've got good news when you have zero positive tests, let's talk about good news, and hopefully Tennessee continues to do everything they can to keep it that way.
Well, and Dan Patrick, very complimentary of this coaching staff and what they had done on the recruiting trail this year. And when you look at 247's rankings of the best recruiters in the country, 4 of the top 7 in the SEC spots belong to Tennessee coaches, and then 4 of the top 18 in the nation. I mean, is this what Jeremy Pruitt was talking about a couple of years ago when he put this staff together and then the tweaks that he has made to this staff, when he said we're going to have the best recruiters in the country?
Yeah, I think both of those points are really important. As Fulmer said early in the process that when he was talking about his interview with Pruitt and saying, well, this guy told me he's going to go out and get all these guys, and usually when you guys tell you this, they're only going to get half of these guys or whatever. But Pruitt's initial staff, even if you don't necessarily like the things that Tyson Helton did as a play caller, that was still a pretty nice pickup there for a brand new head coach in the SEC to get as your offensive coordinator right away, even if it didn't work out here, it wasn't a good fit. So I think from the beginning, he's done a good job identifying the guys that can really help Tennessee. And then the second part of that, as you just said, Heather, being able to adapt, being able to say, all right, this isn't working, as a first-time head coach, being able to recognize when you made mistakes, or maybe you just read a situation wrong or you read a fit wrong, and not being so stubborn. That's been really encouraging to me, even going back to 2018 and the changes they made going into 2019, to not have too much confidence, or where it leads into arrogance, where you just trust your own decision-making so much and you don't want to admit fault by, you know, making a change or anything like that. I think we've seen a lot of flexibility in that from Pruitt. Now, I think Tennessee fans are conditioned to look for that more, because to me that was a big flaw of Butch Jones, is that there wasn't much evolution, there wasn't much, you know, adaptation I've said on the program, and I know others have before, when Butch Jones said he's going to bring in the best coaching staff in America, he really just meant his staff at Cincinnati. So, you know, there wasn't not a lot changed from him. So we're preconditioned to see any change from Pruitt as a good thing because it didn't work out for Butch Jones. But, yeah, I think he's done a great job. That initial staff was really good for where Tennessee was in the moment, and I think that staff has really only gotten better. And, again, he's earned so much trust with the Jim Chaney thing for how long it took for that to all play out and then getting the guy that was better than any of the other names that we were talking about over however many months that lasted where Tennessee didn't have an offensive coordinator. He's just earned a lot of trust, I think, in particular in that department.
Well, Jeremy Pruitt has had 32 decommits in his time as Tennessee's head coach. Now, some of that is the 2018 and 2012 class where they had 12 in each of those 2 years. They only have two in the 21 class. How much of a concern do you have, if any at all, that there will be noticeable turnover in this class when it's all said and done versus where they sit right now as a top five class?
I think my concerns about turnover are not specific to Tennessee. It's just kind of the situation of knowing, you know, are we going to have high school football all over the country this fall? Are there going to be some, you know, states and school systems that don't play? So all of the COVID-19 recipe for instability, all of that gives me pause. And I think all that's a good reason why Tennessee really loaded up on the front end with all these commits. So, yeah, I think we may continue to see really high numbers of decommits, not just at Tennessee, but everywhere because of the uncertainty of everything that's going on. I think at least the things we want to tell ourselves as Tennessee fans about the earlier decommitment stuff is Pruitt came in at a very strange time as well in recruiting because you had the early signing period was brand new.
Yep.
So that also lends itself to, people a lot smarter than me, not just about Tennessee, but about others that were hired in that 2017 cycle are saying, look, normally when we've been expecting these coaches to really have an up year in year two, that's really got to be year three now, because if you're trying to hire a coach at the same time everybody's signing and these guys, you know, the best players for the most part are signing in December and not February now, I think that is just kind of a good default answer too on, yeah, he's had a lot of decommitments, but some of that I think, and I haven't looked at the numbers for Florida or Nebraska or others that changed their head coach in 17, but some of that I think is just a byproduct of inheriting the newness of that early signing period as well. So, yeah, there's nothing at this point to me, there's nothing specific about Jeremy Pruitt and the staff he's put together that makes me overly concerned about decommitments. I think we're not done with this class, certainly. Again, just the time of the sports world and everything. And that Tennessee, you know, right now is sitting on, 23? So some of it's just math. If Tennessee's still trying to add, you're going to have to subtract at some point in there as well, too.
Yeah, and, Will, Florida has 31. I don't know Nebraska during that same period of time. Mullen took over in November 26th. Pruitt December 7th, both in 2017. So it's a very similar time frame. And there's some other of the first-year coaches. Mississippi State has 28. Arkansas has had two coaches. So some of the others are in the mid to upper 20s, and Florida's is close there too. So certainly that you're absolutely right. That first year, tons of turnover when you're transitioning. And Jeremy Pruitt had it later than all those other new coaches in the league as well at the same time.
Yeah, and again, I think this is a great argument for, again, if we were looking for year two to be the year for a guy in the past, now it would be this year. Now, again, you got to, with the virus, you're throwing all kinds of assumptions out the window, but it made much more sense for Pruitt in Tennessee, probably for Scott Frost in Nebraska and some other, you know, the others you mentioned there, Arkansas and Mississippi State didn't make it to year three, but, it makes much more sense to expect that kind of leap from Tennessee this year than the conversations we were having a year ago. Because I think even if Tennessee didn't stumble against Georgia State and BYU last year, their ultimate fate, they probably still would have gone to the Gator Bowl and played Indiana just the way the league was. So those losses they cost Tennessee a tangible thing of having 9 wins or you know, whatever the case may be in the regular season. But it didn't necessarily affect the overall ceiling of what the 2019 team could be. So yeah, I think now if this early signing period sticks around and things maintain, you know, something similar in the feel and calendar of recruiting, year three, if you're inheriting a situation where you're really at the bottom like Tennessee was at the end of 2017, year three is when you expect to cash in on that stuff because you've navigated through all these decommitments and yeah, everything we've been talking about that Pruitt has, I think, done a really good job with.
We're talking to Will Shelton from Game Day on Rocky Top. Will, Caden Salter, big accolades for him earlier this week. Just what do you think in regards to him being possibly the quarterback of the future or that difference maker after the week that he had competing in the Elite 11?
Again, this is all great news for Tennessee, where now you don't just have to put it on one guy. You know, you don't just have to put it on him. You don't just have to put it on Harrison Bailey. Plenty of us were trying to put it on Brian Maurer in early October last year. So you don't just – good recruiting and good program building means, yeah, you're going to get a bunch of guys that you feel like could be the answer in there and then let them battle it out and figure out who needs to be the one. So, you know, this is all a good thing for Tennessee. I still think it's in Tennessee's best interest if Jared Garantano is the answer in every single game Tennessee plays this fall. But then, yeah, you're going to have a really interesting quarterback situation going forward into the future for when Pruitt really does want to cash in on 9, 10-plus wins and try to get back to Atlanta and that sort of stuff. That's going to be a very competitive room. It's a very competitive room already. But that way, you know, if you just miss, a recruiting analyst missed on one of these guys, you've got multiple guys now that could come in and do that. If somebody gets hurt early on, it should make everybody in this process better and make you more confident in whoever wins the job for Tennessee or whoever the quarterback of the future is, that person had to go through some highly regarded prospects to get there. So I think it's much healthier from a fan standpoint to be able to celebrate what he did at Elite 11, just in getting there and doing well there, and not have to feel like, man, it better be this guy. If it's not this guy, then we're in a world of trouble. Pruitt, again, has done a great job recruiting to where that doesn't have to be the case. And again, whoever ultimately ends up winning this thing, I think is going to certainly have to earn it.
What's been going on at Game Day on Rocky Top? I know y'all have had a lot of unit breakdowns and unit rankings. What are you guys working on right now?
So those unit rankings come from our Game Day on Rocky Top magazine that is on shelves right now in East Tennessee. You can get it online from us, but that's just kind of individual pieces of some things that you'll find in our magazine. I did a thing today just looking at Jim Chaney's offense in terms of if Tennessee wants to be a team that really leans heavily on the run, can they do it without a Tim Jordan? Can they do it if they don't get a breakout year from T. Hodge, or if they don't put Corvarius Crouch in the short yardage situation and give him more carries and that sort of stuff? So we looked at a piece today just looking back at what Chaney did in particular at Arkansas in 2014 and at Georgia in 2017, where he was giving so many carries to so many different guys. When we think about that Georgia team with Chubb and Sony Michel only averaged 11 carries a game on that team. They really did a good job keeping people fresh. And if Tennessee can keep Ty Chandler and Eric Gray healthy and just get, you know, 5 carries a game from somebody else, I think there's a very compelling argument that Tennessee's best football, for whatever we want to say about quarterback, Tennessee's best offense is going to come through running it more behind that offensive line and developing those guys. So we just kind of looked at all those run-pass ratios and all that stuff, both at Tennessee last year and at Chaney's previous stops, particularly against Oklahoma. And, you know, rebuilding defensive line, doesn't have all the pieces. A heavier lean on the run game, I think, could be Tennessee's best path forward.
That's Will Shelton from Game Day on Rocky Top. Don't forget to pick up your magazine on newsstands or go to gamedayonrockytop.com for more information. Will, we appreciate you joining us today. We look forward to talking to you next week, and have a great 4th of July weekend.
All right. Thanks. Same to y'all.
Will Shelton, Game Day on Rocky Top. When we come back, we'll take a look at the leaderboard at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, give you an update there, and get you ready for hour number 3 of Sports 180 coming up next on The Sports Animal.
The voices in our head may not be real, but they're loud and have some good ideas. This is 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Board with Seamus Power, Matthew Wolf, Bryson DeChambeau, and Mark Hubbard, all at 11 under for the day. They are all in the clubhouse, in case you missed that earlier. You've got Chris Kirk, who is now 5 under for the day through 7 holes. Not too shabby. He is 10 under for the tournament. He has moved up to tied for 5th right now. Scott Stallings on the course. He is currently tied for 18th. He is even through his first 2 holes today, so he is still sitting there at 7 under. So good luck to Scott Stallings. Can't wait to see him playing this weekend for another big check, and he's definitely been one of the hottest golfers, I think, on tour over the last couple of weeks. Vince Ferrara, you were perusing the Twitterverse, and you found some more updated odds for new names for the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, this one from Odd Shark, a little bit different from what we talked about from Sportsline earlier. The leader, the best odds from Odd Shark for a new Washington NFL team name is Presidents at plus 300, followed by a plus 400 Generals and Lincolns, plus 500 Americans, Kings, and Memorials, plus 600 Capitals.
Well, they can't do that, right? Because of the hockey team?
I think the O and the A would be the difference there. So that would how they would distinguish that. But no, it sounds
the same.
And,
yeah,
and
it's the same.
It is. So Capitals, Veterans are plus 600, plus 700. Jeffersons and Roosevelts, plus 800. Monuments.
Why are they just naming president names? That is just so dumb.
It's Vegas, so they know a lot, but it seems like maybe we're throwing some stuff up against the wall with some of these odds. I don't know how you come up with it, but anyway, those are among the tops, a little bit different from Sportsline.
I wonder if it'll even happen. I wonder just how much pressure they're feeling to actually change this name. You've seen the water get warm around the Redskins name, or even get hot before this. Now, this is the first time that I can remember a corporate partner has come out and applied some pressure, with FedEx making their comments and then Nike kind of pulling all Washington Redskins stuff at this point in time. So maybe it is a little bit more legitimate, but man, it's definitely a name that's been around for a long time, but so had Uncle Ben's rice and Aunt Jemima's syrup and stuff like that, and you saw all those names getting changed over the last few weeks of major brands.
Yeah, the standard is different in terms of sensitivity in this country, and you hit the key, and that's a major corporate sponsor. When they start to put pressure on it, things can certainly change. You know, anything regarding the Memphis Grizzlies would have a similar type of FedEx pressure for them over there as well.
Yeah. I wonder if they can still use an Indian or Native American name if it's not going to be the Redskins.
Perhaps. I mean, if they can find a way to change the name without changing the what they view probably is honoring Native American heritage. They have their own defense on it. If they can do something that isn't a complete change and find an alternative to it, I mean, one of the sports line odds, and it wasn't great odds, was Skins. So is that enough? Maybe that would be some sort of.
I don't know how you make that into a logo, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you just go with something like a DC, or maybe you don't necessarily have that. You know, Green Bay has just the G. You can go with something generic to where that's a part of your name, but not necessarily in a logo. I don't know, but that's a possibility to try to still have some semblance of what they had without that name.
Yeah. It's really weird. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it looks like the public pressure is definitely growing to a point where the Washington Redskins earlier today went ahead and put out a release saying we're doing a formal review and looking into the current name and moving forward, possibly new names. So thought that was interesting. And we'll see what Dan Snyder ends up doing with his team this offseason. But a lot of change. A lot of change right now for the Washington Redskins, except for the ownership position with Ron Rivera coming in. This being his first year with the squad, and you still have a new-ish quarterback in Dwayne Haskins. So just a lot going on right now with the Redskins.
Absolutely. And the bottom line, unfortunately for them, is they may not get the wins this year to maybe quiet some of the off-the-field stuff down. It's not going to completely go away, but if you were a contender, you and the fans could at least concentrate on an exciting season, but there's really not much expectations for them, and even in year one for Ron Rivera just yet. So it's rough for them right now.
Yeah. So I think, is Sentinels really a possibility, or is that just Barrett Slee being funny and throwing in the movie reference?
Yeah, you know, Keanu Reeves fans will probably...
I'm a big Keanu fan. Love him.
Get on board with that. I who knows on that, but, you know, there's those defenders. So you brought that up. I think that's a nice one also, but does the XFL give that up? How does that work? Warriors, but you have Golden State Warriors already. You could have the same name in multiple sports. We'll see. So, yeah, there's others that are out there. But Sentinels is interesting because of that movie connection. And Barrett's right. That was sharp-looking jersey. And then the logo, you know, they had, it's kind of like the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the Canadian Football League, kind of the football going through the W. It's kind of a cool look.
I liked the Federals, the USFL. Homage.
Great color scheme also, too. Love the green and white that they had also.
And then also this one that seems to be gaining steam online. And I think this has been kicked around for a long time. Like, every time this conversation comes up, the Red Tails also comes up. So it could be more legs for that logo and that moniker moving forward.
Right, because it's got... certainly some history, and you know, we'll see what everybody thinks of it. But then you're highlighting a group that was part of the military as well, that they could score some points with if that's what they're, or show honor to if that's what they're looking to completely reverse it, as opposed to just doing something that's safe that they can just move past this. We'll see what their approach is if they do it.
Special programming coming up on ESPNU tonight. We'll give you all of those details as Johnny Majors is going to be remembered by a documentary put together by VFL Films. Barry Rice was on our airwaves earlier this week. We're going to bring you some comments on how this documentary came to fruition, how they were able to put it together, and put it together so quickly. And you know it's going to be good because it was done by VFL Films, and it's going to be on The U tonight. We'll give you all the details coming up next on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.